Hello again. George Halford, Local Matters, talking about the who and what's going on and our, with our audience. I believe we've got one of the most exciting programs that that I've been involved in my tenure here for the last several months. We're going to focus on Native Americans. Native Americans, our heritage, more than the Cherokee. There's just so much. And we have two people with us today, Dr. Troy Smith, Tennessee Tech, expert in Native Americans and Indian affairs, Native American affairs nationally. And then we have Aspen Yahola, I hope I did that, Aspen.
Yes, sir.
Who is a Native American, has a history and a tradition, and we're really going to focus on that and a major event coming up. So welcome, and I have a tough job. I've got to listen, and I love to talk, so I'm going to try to behave myself. But let's just start about who are you? What do you? Let's talk about Native American and our heritage and where we are, and then we'll go into the actual event.
All right. Well, I'll just start real quickly. I am Troy Smith. I work in the history department at Tennessee Tech, and I teach several different American Indian studies courses. And like I was saying before we started, everybody's not part of the Native community and Native history, but Native history is a part of all of us.
Yes.
As Americans.
Yes.
In fact, I think you can't understand American history if you don't understand something about Native American culture.
I believe that. I mean, I believe that in what little I've read, and that's a great idea, great focus.
My name is Aspen Yahola. I am an enrolled member of the Muscogee Creek Nation out in Oklahoma.
Mm-hmm.
I am a pre-vet major here at Tennessee Tech, and I am starting a Native American club to kind of enrich our education for this community. And me and my mom put on a powwow in Wilson County every year. This year will actually be our 41st annual Wilco powwow. It's September 28th and 29th, and it got started by my grandfather, Don Yahola, and we've been running it ever since.
Wow, I've learned something already. That is really great. We were talking before we started off air about I'm from Mississippi. I'm Choctaw. I believe that's right. A Meridian. My best friend growing up was a Choctaw Indian from Philadelphia who had been adopted by a dentist. So this isn't about me. I think I told you that off air. Let's talk about the heritages of the Cherokee, the Choctaw, the various the history a little bit. What we have in this region.
Well, just real quickly, I'll say that most people think of Cherokees because was Cherokee territory.
Predominantly Cherokee.
And they were in control of it when it was taken from them. But there were other groups here before the Cherokee and some that were here at the same time. There were the Yuchi, there were the Shawnee in the area. Creeks were in this area and several other tribes. So there's a really rich heritage just in our little Upper Cumberland region.
Okay. The thing I've heard is these were hunting grounds. Am I right about? I mean, these areas, tribes, Cherokees, others came here in this general region, and this was the hunting area.
Well, actually, Yuchis lived here until Cherokees chased them out, so they could make it the hunting area.
Okay, then it became more.
Then it became the hunting area.
Okay.
And now the Muscogee Creeks, there was two, actually, creeks. There was Muscogee Creek and Porch Creek, and they were in this area between Alabama and Tennessee.
Okay.
So Alabama, Tennessee, and Georgia. So they actually got into a dispute about Trail of Tears, like the whole Trail of Tears aspect and all of that. And actually, my great-grandfather, Apothel Yahola, he's my fourth great-grandfather, he actually didn't agree with one of the things that the chief did at that time.
Okay.
And he ordered to kill him because he's like, no, you're not going to do this. That's going to set us back. And, like, you're going to give all of our land away.
Mm.
And he goes, if you sign that treaty, I'm going to send somebody to kill you. And sure enough, he was found dead just a few days later after he signed that treaty. Wow. So
we're all real nice to Aspen.
Yeah.
Yeah, you better, but I get it.
It was a capital offense among the Creeks and among the Cherokees for anybody to sign over and sell land without the approval of the majority of the people.
And this was done in violation of that.
Violation of that, yes.
Wow.
And Apothleohola is one of the all-time great leaders of the Creek Nation.
There's actually so many, like memorials and all of that out in Oklahoma. And there's actually, before the Smithsonian caught on fire years ago, there was an original picture of him in the Smithsonian.
Oh, okay.
And they were just talked about how great of a leader he is. And it's so crazy because you can go out anywhere. Like, even if you go to Georgia, there's a whole, it's called Okmulgee Mounds.
Okmulgee, I'm familiar in around Macon, Georgia.
Yes, Okmulgee Mounds, they have a whole place just for him, and it is crazy.
Wow. Okay, man, that is great. As you were talking, you know, we tend to stereotype, the white folks or the Native Americans. But among the Native, it wasn't one monolithic group. You had different factions. You had different tribes, different nationalities of Native Americans. Is that what?
That's true. And there were a lot of politics going on
here
in Middle Tennessee before any white people ever showed up.
Mm-hmm. Okay. That'd be interesting to know, yeah.
There's actually over 500 civilized tribes in the United States.
500?
Federally recognized tribes through the United States. And that just says how many of us are actually still here, because there are still, you hear all the time, are in schools that everybody, all the Native Americans died on the Trail of Tears, but no, there's
small. I would imagine not a small percentage, but
about 25%.
Okay, yeah.
Still,
okay. Again, we were talking earlier, the Trail of Tears. There was more than one Trail of Tears. There was probably the main exodus where they were forced out, but there were other migrations early on where. I imagine the Cherokee decided they were going west. Tell us about that.
Among the Cherokees, some people took the deal early and gave up their land and went west.
Voluntarily.
So voluntarily. The majority of the tribe didn't want to give up their land, just like with the Creeks. And they tried to hold out and fight it in court as long as they could. But even when they started the removal process, they grabbed everybody up and pinned them up in stockades and left them there until they could find a way to transport them. And there were different waves. You know, like with
that's
the Cherokees,
the
first couple of waves were by river, and that didn't work because there was a drought and the river was too low.
Ooh.
And a bunch of people died.
Okay.
And then they started sending several different groups on different routes. And so they didn't all arrive there at the same time. Some of them arrived several months after the others, even in that group that hadn't wanted to go.
And we were talking off air, they would just come in, and you'd be in your, abode, and they just you had no time to pack. There was no packing, is it?
There was no packing.
You just basically they took you.
They took you. They would hold you at gunpoint and say you're going whether you like it or not.
Yeah.
So I mean, you can't say no to that if you have.
No.
So and if a relative got sick, they had to leave them. They couldn't stay there and help them or anything. Or there's been multiple times, or there's multiple stories actually of while they were crossing the rivers, that the soldiers would just push people off the boats just to kill them, so that way that they didn't have to deal with so many Indians at that point in time, and they didn't have to transport that many, and just kind of a way to get rid of them.
Less work.
Mm-hmm.
Less work on that part. Man, that is just, we're just hitting the tip of the iceberg. Other stories or anything you want to share? And then let's really talk about the event. Is it cost to attend? Is it free event? Is it open to the public?
It is open to the public. It costs $10 to get in. We are a cash only event. That's just for the gate admission. Sure. Is cash only. Veterans and age and seniors are $5. Kids are $5. Okay. And it's 5 and under are free. It is a 2-day event. You have to pay each day to get in.
Okay.
There's something at any given time. Our gates open at 10 o'clock. At 10 o'clock, our Aztec dancers come out.
Wow.
Then we have a flute artist that will come out. We'll have Buffalo, actually, from Little G Buffalo Farm.
Yes.
They
yes.
will be bringing out some buffalo to this year's powwow. We have a sand artist. We have blow darts. We have tomahawk throwing. We
wow.
have everything for little kids. We'll have some teepees there. We'll have storytelling. And
wow.
then the most beautiful thing is grand entry.
So really it's a festival, but for someone like me, it's an educational.
Yes.
One can learn a lot about Native American history and traditions and culture by coming to this event.
So. Yeah, absolutely. And it's the best one in Middle Tennessee. One of the best, if not the best, I think. That's my opinion. But
okay.
I'm biased, and I say it's my best, but I am biased in that.
When we come back, we want to spend more time. You sharing with me that you talk about the heritage and going way back and what you're trying to do and what y'all are doing with Tennessee Tech and some of the other. We've got some time to really go deep on some of these things and talk about things that most people really, including myself, know very little about. So George Halford here with Dr. Troy Smith, Tennessee Tech, and Aspen Yahola. Back soon. George Halford, we're back, Local Matters, and what a great topic we have today, Native Americans and our region, and we won't have enough time to do it justice, but we'll do the best we can. We have Dr. Troy Smith, Tennessee Tech University history professor and an authority on Native American history and the culture. And then we have Aspen Yahola, who is a
I'm a pre-vet major at Tennessee Tech.
No, but you're also a
Muscogee Creek.
Muscogee Creek, and has a tremendous heritage. We're going to come back in a few the last segment, but let's focus on the event itself and talk about just all the things that are going to be happening, and whether you're someone coming to learn more about Native Americans or actually going to a great festival.
So the Wilco Powwow is, like I said, is held every fourth weekend of September at the Wilson County Fairgrounds. This will be our fourth year here at Wilson County Fairgrounds. The gates open daily at 10:30 a.m. As soon as those gates open, we'll have Aztec dancers. Then we'll have a flute player. And if you didn't know, Aztec dancers actually are indigenous. They are just like a different type, like not necessarily a different type, but they are still indigenous to this area. And they just come out and they dance, and it is beautiful. That's one of the most beautiful things that's out there. And then, like I said, we'll have blow dart demonstrations. We'll have tomahawk throwing. We'll have buffalo. We will have TP storytelling. Storytelling is awesome because you just get to hear all those stories. It's great for the kids. Then we'll also have this thing called grand entry. That's like where all of the dancers come in together and they enter the arena, and it's the most beautiful thing that you will ever see. Within that grand entry, you'll hear this beat of a drum. And the drum actually represents Mother Earth's heartbeat.
Wow.
So you can hear, yeah. like, every time I've asked somebody, how do you like the powwow? And then, like, they will tell me the drum, it sounds so good. It makes me want to cry because it's like I can feel it, like, it's my own heartbeat.
It's your soul.
It is.
Yeah.
And so that's one thing that is absolutely gorgeous. We'll also have competition dancing within, like, it's Native American dancing. Mm-hmm. So we'll have I dance, not at this pile, but I typically dance. I dance a style called jingle dress. Mm-hmm. You have a cone that represents every single day of the year. And this style of dancing is actually called a prayer dance. So each cone that represents a different day is a different prayer. So if you have, like, if you're out there in that arena and you know that somebody that's sick or somebody that is suffering or anything, somebody that's going through a loss, you will sit out there and you will pray for that person. You will think of that person. And then I've always been told if you see a cone, like if you notice that you had a cone that's fallen off, that's an answered prayer. So that's just like most Christians, they'll pray and they'll pray. It's just, it's the same thing. And I think that is so cool to me, just seeing how, since I started dancing, I've had plenty of cones fall off, and I've had plenty of times where I've gone out and I've just sat there and prayed for people that were suffering, prayed for people that were sick, and then I've seen them get better. And
power of faith, it's universal.
It is.
You've been a dancer, I understand, off air, your whole life.
My
You've been
whole
involved
life.
As a child. You might comment on that.
Yes. So since my mom took over this powwow, it's our 41st, like I said, this is our 41st annual. She's been over this powwow since 2002 when my grandfather passed away. When he was on his deathbed, she was told by him, you need to take this powwow on. And she has been doing it ever since. I've been dancing. I think my first time out in the arena, I couldn't even walk. So I've literally been dancing my whole life. So, it's something amazing and something just, you feel at home. So anytime you're dancing, you just feel at home. I've danced jingle. I've danced fancy. Fancy shawl is it's a more fast beat. So like if you're somebody that loves cardio, you'll be able to keep up with them. Yeah. So and then the same thing with like men's. For the men's, you have grass, you have fancy, you have traditional. You have all of these dances that represent different things, and they are just. It's, like I said, it's just so beautiful.
This is tradition. This is a culture.
This is.
So different tribes, when they're seeing different tribes performing, they know exactly what all this is, right? It's has meaning. I mean, that's the word I'm trying to.
So almost every tribe has a different dance or a different style that they do. Tribes will. Like, not that they let you, but you get adopted into what you're dancing. They don't care that you're dancing that. Like, you get shown how to dance a certain style. Like me, I'm a Muscogee Creek. Creeks don't dance. They don't powwow.
Well, Baptists don't dance. I shouldn't have said that. I grew up Baptist. I had to throw that in.
So
modern Baptists do. My generation. We're not supposed to.
So Creek is actually don't powwow. They have this thing called a stomp dance, and that's like very, very. It's like a private thing, and it is that's cool. But my dance, like I said, is jingle, and it's Ojibwe. So that's not even my tribe, but yeah, I'm dancing it, and it's because I've gotten taught, and I've gotten that blessing to be able to dance.
Sure, it's connection, it's community. Is things that we talk about on a broader scale that we're losing in this country. We're lost, and I'm not talking about. I'm not getting into politics, but you're keeping a sense of community of who you are.
Yes,
and where you're going. And it sounds like, young lady, it's being handed down from your mother to you long term, and you're taking it very, very seriously.
Yes.
I love that.
We've been asked plenty of times, when are y'all going to have a spring powwow? When are you going to have another powwow? So my goal before I graduate at Tennessee Tech is to start a powwow here in Cookeville.
That'd be wonderful.
And it would go right along with me. I've also started a club, a Native American called Native American Student Association. I'm trying to get as many people as I can into that club.
And you got an expert sitting next to you who can help you and do this. Yeah, he knows, doesn't he?
He's actually my advisor for this club. So this works out well having Dr. Smith with us.
Man, that is great. We've got about a minute left in this segment. Then we're going to get into some storytelling. And I'm looking forward. Anything else you want to talk about, Doc? Aspen about this event or anything, anything that we've left out. People can go online. People can order tickets. How do we do all that?
So we are a cash only event. So it's admission. You got to pay there. We haven't gotten to that type of technology
yet. You're growing to that.
We are growing. Right. We're trying to grow to that. We do have a TikTok. It is Wilco Powwow. Okay. We have a Facebook, which is also Wilco Powwow.
That's good.
We have an Instagram, is Wilco Powwow. And then we have our website, which is wilcopowwow.com.
And you've, thank goodness, with Dr. Smith, Tennessee Tech, the resources that are avenues that are available to publicize is time to come. So that's a good start. So I can't wait for the next segment. I'm not trying to stop this one, but George Hallford will be back with Local Matters with Dr. Troy Smith, Professor of History at Tennessee Tech, Indian Affairs, Native American Affairs expert, and Aspen Yahola. Okay, we're back. George Hallford, the topic, I've learned something off air. We're going to get back into it. American Indian, and it's a whether you're American Indian or you're a Native American or you are there's different ways to pay homage and respect to a group of people. I want to come to that in a moment. Dr. Troy Smith, the professor of history at Tennessee Tech, and Aspen Yahola, an American Indian student at Tennessee Tech. And I always forget the tribe. I got to do Ohio Muskogee. Several generations. So let's pick up. We're going to do some story. We want to hear stories in this last segment. But let's pick up on that. I ask you off air, as someone who whose family has my wife and his family and most of us have Indian Native American blood. What's the proper? Let's talk about how proper ways to address the group, or it's mixed. Is what I heard off air that. Let's spend a few minutes on that.
Well, it's a complicated topic, obviously. There was a government survey a couple of decades ago, and it's been consistent asking indigenous people which they preferred, Native American or American Indian, and more preferred American Indian, which is why the government and academia is going back to that. But you know, I think it was like 60%. That means 40% don't.
Yeah.
And so many of the ones that don't really, really, really don't and feel very strongly about it. So to answer your question, most indigenous people would prefer to be called by the name of their tribe or nation.
Just use the tribe
Muskogee
or nation.
Creek for Aspen. And if you have to use a broader term, because sometimes you do, just be sensitive, you know, to your audience. If I know that I'm talking with someone who finds that term offensive, I won't use it.
Sure.
But if I know I'm with somebody that prefers that term, I will. But that's just me, you know, because I feel like as a non-Native person, I don't have the right to tell anybody what they should prefer or what is good or what is right. I just want to honor what people want. And it becomes kind of complicated.
Maybe it could be as simple as asking the person you're talking to, how do you prefer to be grouped or called when we're talking about a broader body, and let them tell us? Because I wouldn't have known that. I was searching even during this program. The African Americans and blacks and other, you know, there were other things years ago that weren't too nice, but we're not going to get into that's a whole nother subject. But yes, ma'am.
Now, you can always go up instead of automatically assuming, are you Indian? Are you this? Are you that?
Yeah.
You can just go up and say, what's your tribe? What tribe are you affiliated with?
Sure.
And that way you know whether they say, oh, you can just call me American Indian, or I'm just American Indian, or I'm Muskogee Creep, I'm Blackfoot, or whatever. They will tell you right then and there. And they see it as a respect. And it actually helps you not seem so judgmental whenever you go up and just kind of approach it.
Yeah, this may not be a good question, but in this multicultural society we live in, I don't even think about that a lot. I don't think about. I just know you're a human being, a child of God, and you're you're here. So I don't, to get into the granular detail, there would be only a small portion, would there not? Mm-hmm. But being careful that we don't say something that's inappropriate.
Yeah.
Is that it? That's all it is.
It depends on your audience, really. It depends on who you're talking to and what they prefer. And I just like I said, I like to honor all people. I think people deserve to be called what they want to be called.
No question.
And I'll just say that there's one term that very few indigenous people like across the board. Maybe a few, but not many. But I don't know if we want to go into that.
Yeah, go ahead.
I think, Aspen, do you want to repeat what you said earlier or put you on the spot?
So the term is called Redskins.
Oh, yeah, the Washington Redskins. That's sports. There's been some controversy.
Yeah, so actually that is a slur towards Native Americans. Like I said off air, it's kind of like calling, like using the black word toward, or the N-word towards a black person.
Yeah, okay. See, I didn't know
and
that.
So it's in the same area. It's very, if you knew the story behind it, it goes, and it's very, very sad.
Okay.
And I will give you a little backstory, kind of. Basically, the color red, the name Redskins came from where the skin was red after, well, it wasn't skin, but in the old days, they would scalp the Indians. Yep.
Didn't know that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Sorry, and that's where the term Redskins come from, is because they were red, and they scalped them, and that's how they called them.
And I just want to clarify that we're not talking just about Native people doing that. We're talking about in the French and Indian War, mm-hmm. both the French and the English paid a bounty
for the scalps of
Native people who were fighting on the other side.
No.
So it was
a European scalping Native people. And average, I shouldn't say average persons, being sensitive and knowing. And we talked a little bit off air about sports. Properly done, asking how do you want to be called, what your group? You have the Florida State Seminoles that the Seminole tribe as a group has embraced some place. It's a mixed bag, but it gets back to who are you and what do you want to be known as, called? Is that it in a nutshell?
Yeah, and it's not monolithic. Everybody doesn't feel the same.
There's not just one American Indian group. That's what we've learned. Within the Indian Native culture, you said 500 tribes.
500 federally, and that's just federally recognized. That's not counting state recognized. That's not counting ones that can't get recognized. That's just the ones that are federally recognized, saying that you have a card that says, I'm an enrolled citizen of Muscogee Creek Nation.
And like all groups don't get along. I mean, it's not like there's one monolithic group. Mm-hmm. Is that fair?
Sometimes people in the same group don't get along because they're human.
Human beings. I'm sorry.
No, excuse me. Go ahead.
The Muscogee Creek and Porch Creek, they actually don't get along. So that's what I think is crazy. It's the same area, but they don't get along because
knowledge. You know it. We're having so much fun with that topic. Let's tell a few stories here and talk. There's some things, Dr. Smith, you wanted to
bring. Well, I just wanted to, first of all, I wanted to say that the first time I ever saw Aspen, she was dancing at a powwow. She's like 8 or 9 years old, and we've watched her grow up.
Wow.
And I can tell you that the indigenous community in Middle Tennessee is awfully proud of this young lady. But I want to talk about her great-great-great-great-grandfather, Apothele Yohola, who we mentioned already. He's the one that killed the chief that signed the treaty that led to them having to suffer the Trail of Tears.
I understand.
But 20-something years later, when the Civil War is about to start, the governments of the five tribes sided with the Confederacy, but the people were divided down the middle between whether they wanted to support the Confederates or the Union. And so there were soldiers on both sides in uniform from among these tribes. However, Apothele Yohola was opposed to allying with the Confederacy.
Okay.
And so he took a lot of his followers and other people that came to them, including a lot of runaway slaves and a lot of pro-Union Cherokees and Choctaws. They came to him, and they had this exodus north up through Oklahoma to get to the Kansas border where the U.S. was in control, the
I
Union.
See. Yeah.
And they were attacked the whole way by Confederate soldiers, some of whom were Confederate Creeks and Cherokees, some of whom were Texas Rangers.
Wow, what a...
And there was a lot of life lost, but that big exodus, 5,000-6,000 people, men, women, children, old people, made this journey successfully, although many of them were killed. And that is just really amazing, that story about – it's called The Flight of Apothliahola, where they ran away from the Confederate territories. And once they got there, a lot of those anti-Confederate Creeks and Cherokees joined the Union Army. So there were – a lot of people don't know that there were Cherokees in blue and gray and Choctaws and Creeks in blue and gray fighting one another.
You know, this tracks exactly what happened. The borderlands, as you know, is a – in this part of the world, mm-hmm. you had in the other aspects of our community, the white community, you had brother against brother. You had so the Native American group was no different than in a lot of ways than the population as a whole.
They had their own civil war within the
yes.
Civil War.
I learned something today. We've got a couple of minutes left. Anything else? Stories or? The richness of what you're telling is just really outstanding. It's great.
The amount of stories that we could tell, it's unbelievable. But one story that I'll never forget, and my mom told me this a long time ago, but it was still whenever she was in high school, and she had I'm Creek and I'm Proud. And back then, that was whenever people were, like, still very, like, you don't hang out with different colors. Like, white people hang out with white people. Blacks hang out with blacks.
Segregated, no uh-huh. different. And, yeah.
Exactly. So she drove around the square in Lebanon, and she didn't know that the KKK was there. They were having a meeting on the square in Lebanon. And she told me that whenever her daddy found out, that she got yelled at so much and she was almost punched. She said that her daddy said, Cindy, you know better not to drive around, especially when the KKK is out there having a meeting. You could have gotten killed. And every time we drive around the square in Lebanon, we always say, at least the KKK isn't here. So that's one of my favorite stories.
You know, as y'all were talking, what a rich opportunity we have as a community and Tennessee Tech in a leadership role, your family and others to really build this thing, the awareness, in the future. This is just telling stories, storytelling of the Native American experience, and having I want to talk to the chamber a little bit about. And CNV Convention Visitors Bureau. I'm about to run out of time. Just want to thank you. Great program. George Hofford, Local Matters. This is it. I was going to say back soon. Bye-bye.